Hi, Terry.
Hi, Dahlia.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you? It's been a while.
Good.
Good. Hi, Denise.
Hi, Denise.
Can you hear us, Denise? No, it's frozen. And 707. Hi there. Welcome. Who has called? Hi, Denise.
Hi.
It is May 11th. Alfonso Medina is sharing with us coaching in the brain, how the mind can help coaches be effective. Alfonso.
Thank you, Terry. Thank you, everyone, for participating and being here in this call. I hope it's useful for you, and I hope I can meet all your expectations. What was the motivation for this? Probably we have one of the best coaching models within Sun. If you look at it from my old perspective, for those who don't know, I used to be a teacher in basic psychology, and a football trainer. And my job was researching on the very basic fundamentals of human behavior, and that included some knowledge about neurosciences. I'm trying to tell you something that I learned that is matching with excellent coaching. Some knowledge around five basic processes of the mind brain, I like to call it this way, five basic processes that can help coaches be most efficient. If we know these laws of functioning, what are these five basic processes? In five words, learning, attention, motivation, emotion, and problem solving. My view is that when we hold a conversation with a client, we are in some ways influencing their capacity for learning, for attending, for motivating themselves, for keeping emotions, and in a more overall perspective, we are influencing in their capacity to solve problems. We will get into a little bit of detail, but before that, I want to tell you also that in all my conversations with neuroscientists for many years, they used to tell me, listen, Alfonso, the brain works in a very simple, maybe stupid way. But it works in such a parallel, massively parallel way that it looks like the brain was complex. The brain only creates patterns, connection patterns. And these connection patterns become the foundations of behavior. Of course, there is a long way from studying the cell or studying the brain connections until you have a whole external behavior. In between, there are, from my point of view, well, there may be more, but we are going to simplify to these five basic processes which are involved in any conversation, in probably in any human activity. What would be useful for a coach to know about learning processes? What is basic in a learning process? Well, I will talk about three things that can be easily managed by a coach within a coaching conversation. One is reinforcers. One of the basic laws of learning in adults and also children, in humans and other species, is learning by reinforcement. Okay? It's very simple what I'm going to say. I'm feeling dumb, but I'm sure your questions will illuminate this. Because sometimes we forget to ask about what are the reinforcers. Sometimes as coaches forget about what are the things that are reinforcing my client's current behavior. And what are the things that will reinforce my client's desired behavior? Another thing around reinforcement is, what is the pattern of reinforcement for a given behavior? For the current behavior, maybe not desired anymore behavior, and the future behavior. In our learning history, we may have learned to hold a given behavior in a one-to-one reinforcement pattern. That is, every time I do this, I expect to get the reinforcement. And sometimes people, humans, have learned to expect the reinforcement after 3, 4, 5, 20, 200 times providing a given behavior. For instance, when you study, you are expecting to provide, to get the expected reinforcer. Once you have repeated a given behavior, studying, for a long, long time. Sometimes we learn behaviors that we are only determined to do if we get an immediate reinforcement. I think it would be useful for coaches to know what is the reinforcement pattern which is involved in the given behavior, in the current state of the art, and what is the expected pattern of reinforcement with the new desired behavior or state of the art. In talking about learning, it's also useful to get the bigger picture, which is patterns. We not only behave according to immediate or delayed reinforcers, we also get some kind of patterns of behavior. What I'm meaning with patterns of behavior? For me, a pattern includes at least, an emotional state, a thought state, which we typically call a belief, and an action. Okay, implying the three basic levels: body, emotions, and thinking. So, anything, and I say anything, as far as I know, in the client's behavior implies this triad. Each behavior is held by a triangle between a given emotion, a given belief, and a given set of movements, conducts, responses associated to that. When my client holds the belief that something is difficult, it's also holding an emotional state which is coherent with this belief. And it's also compatible only with some set of responses. If I think that something is difficult, I have an emotion which is coherent with this belief, and vice versa. And if I hold a given belief, there is a set of responses, and only a given set of responses associated with the belief that match with also the emotion. That's why I recommend my students, anytime they're working with a belief, or they're working with an emotion, or they're working with a given behavior, please consider it's not only a behavior, it's not only an emotion, it's not only a belief. Try to ask, what is the triangle? What is the set of beliefs associated with the emotion? What is the set of responses associated with the emotion? And all in both ways. What are the emotions associated to your belief? What are the beliefs associated with your emotion? And also, what are the beliefs associated with your responses and your emotions? When I work this way, I think I'm helping more my client to be aware of the situation, and also to gain some kind of extra responsibility and extra awareness that there is not only one emotion, not only one belief, not only one response or behavior. So what do? I ask for the three things every time. Another aspect in learning is modeling. Sometimes we learn not through our own experience, we learn through our modeling. When we learn through modeling, we are attributing emotions, responses, and beliefs to our model and qualities, of course, in general. So what are the qualities of this model you want to be inspired of? But also, what are the beliefs And also, what are the emotions? What is my belief in any pattern of behavior? There are weak and strong elements. In one case, the strong element may be the emotion. In another case, the strong element may be the belief. In another case, the strong element may be the response. So let's try to find which is the weak connection, the weak wire in those triangles or triads, so that the client may be more comfortable and more confident that he could break the circle through the weakest wire. Second process, attention. Well, for me, attention is one of the most important elements to be aware of when coaching my clients. There are basic questions that I learned from Tim Galloway and from Terry that I'm going to mention. First, Tim Galloway. The key point of his coaching and his impact in modern coaching is asking, where do you have the attention? Where are you putting your attention? The big impact of his tennis training was suggesting to look at the ball, putting the attention in the ball, instead of putting the attention in those places where you are not finding the desired success. So asking the client, where is she putting her attention, may be a powerful question. In San, we all have learned the perspective principle. Of course, it's wide enough not to speak about it here. But there was from the beginning one big lesson there. And it's asking myself as a coach, where is my client's attention? Where is he talking from? Is he talking to me with her attention on the past, with her attention on the future, with her attention on the present? These are very simple things. However, in my experience, have become very, very useful. If I ask myself, where is my client talking from in terms of past, present, future? I can see also where she is not talking from. Some clients may come with a discourse, a dialogue, which is based on the past. Her attention is on the past. And we may make questions like, and today, where are you? What do you think? What do you feel? What do you see around? And some clients are not very keen talking about the future. I think that we can best help if we make questions about the three time perspectives. Of course, we know that asking the client about the past is always for collecting success strategies, guidelines for living, successful experiences. But also, it becomes very important to ask about the future in a very extensive manner. This connects with motivation, the third process. Sometimes we spend very, very little time asking for our clients' future vision. We ask, how do you view yourself in the future? And accept the first question without asking the three levels in the three big dimensions: emotions, beliefs, and actions. Another thing that I like exercising with my clients is asking profoundly and extensively about her vision. There is a cognitive reason, and based on neuroscience also. The stronger the trace of that mental state which is representing the future, the bigger the confidence that it can become real. It's a very simple law. The more you are exposed to something in your brain, the stronger the pattern gets. The stronger the pattern gets, the more real the brain thinks it is. At the same time, asking my client about the future, the desired future, the emotions that will be associated with her desired future, their thoughts, etc., is providing a big amount of motivation. You are suddenly, the client may have the impression that she is not only working for a given meeting result, he is not working for a long-term result. She is working for a lot of things, a lot of important things of her future, of her life. And this allows the client to be more involved in what we were working specifically in the meeting. At the same time, there are other factors in motivation which we may be aware of in order to make questions or to keep our attention as coaches in these areas. One is what is technically called the attributional locus, or the locus of attribution, meaning that in each situation the client may be managing, there may be some internal and external attributions. For instance, a client may be suffering the effect of a failure, a lack of success, and maybe attributing the lack of success either to internal reasons or external reasons or both. For us, as coaches, will be important to do the mirror to these things sometimes the client is using an external attributional style, and everything regarding her failure is somebody else's or something else's cause. This is typical in football players. When they play and lose, it's because of the referee, because of the state of the field, playground, because of some external things. Funny enough, when they win and they are asked, surprisingly enough, it's because they have been playing the way they know, because they have the capability, because they have, that is, internal attribution. How can we influence this attributional style? Of course, by asking for resources, qualities, that the client has or had in the past. This has a lot of influence in the second motivational factor I want to bring today, which is the degree of control. One aspect which is very important in measuring the final amount of motivation for a given task is the degree of control. How much do I believe that the success in this task is under my control? Sometimes, as coaches, we go on to asking for options before we have done anything to help the client become aware of all her qualities, all her resources, or all her guidelines for winning of the past. Of course, you can imagine that my response to the question, what options are you considering? What options would you like to consider? The response to this question may be absolutely different after I have been asked from my future vision and after I have been asked for my previous success strategies, after I have been asked for my qualities, my own way of doing things. So, another thing that I typically recommend to my students is wait before you make the options question. And make sure that you have helped the client have very present all her qualities, all her resources, all her future vision. Another aspect, of course, when I say all her qualities, all her resources, is there something else that we can help the client to have present in her mind? Yes. Life purpose and values. Yes. Okay. What else could be important to taking the coach's mind for motivating the client. One thing that I call the motivational pattern. What is my client's pattern of motivation? There are two simple streams in humans' behavior, motivational behavior. In one stream is the goal-oriented person is motivated by the goal that she is going to get. However, we quite frequently find many clients and many things in our behavior which are motivated by a different thing than the goal or the reinforcer that we will get, the prize or reward. And it's that we are motivated to avoid failure. And this is something we find in every context, and probably is more frequent in the executive arena. I want solutions. However, these solutions must not have any risk or very little risk. The message I want to give here concerning motivation is, please take into account that motivation does not only depend on the amount of reward, it depends on how the client attributes capacity to herself and how the client tends to act in terms of motivational style. Looking for the goal, inspired in the goal, or looking for only those options that ensure a minimal risk. And each of them, for me, are just as well, just as good. It is very difficult to motivate a client which has a stronger motivation of avoidance of failure. And it's very easy or easier to motivate and go with a client that has a high avoidance failure motivation if we stay in the same language. So what is the language for this client? What would it be? Could be questions like, what is the best trade-off solution for you? What is the most secure solution? In any case, I believe that it's useful for the coach to have her mind open to detect what is the motivational style of the client. There is an extra factor which is related with the factors I have mentioned around motivation, which is difficulty of the task. There is a law in psychology which says that there is a specific amount of difficulty perceived that by the client that is optimal for her motivation. That is, tasks or options which have a low difficulty for the client that are perceived as slowly difficult are options which motivate less than other options which are more difficult, up to a limit in which the client, from their own, all the options are extremely difficult. And so motivation to get these options, to choose these options, lowers down. As coaches, it could be useful to put an eye on this and ask the client, what is the right level of difficulty of the tasks you like to do? It is always a trade-off between the internal attribution of capacity, of controllability, and the external attribution in terms of difficulty of the task. Emotions. I would go rapidly through that because you all know more than me about this. Another thing that I learned in the SAN manual is what is in the DEEP principle. Whenever we get a client that is stressed or comes to the meeting with a very high emotion, instead of thinking of the emotion as a limiting state, let's think of the emotion as a source of energy. Any intense emotion has a lot of energy inside. Thank you for this, Terry. So, if we focus on the energy of the emotion instead of the quality of the emotion, we may be helping more. If we focus on connecting this emotion with beliefs and actions, we may be helping the client more. And if we make questions like, what do you choose to do with this energy? We are really managing progress and accountability. So let's look at emotions as energy sources rather than quality things, qualitative things. Of course, emotions are sources for providing also information or meaning. Yes. However, I wonder what is the use of making questions in order to define the emotion? I leave it on the table for later. Another thing is the utility of emotions. From my point of view, even though the discourse of the client may be different from this, even when the discourse of the client is naming the emotion as not desired, as negative, as etc., there is a utility in every emotion. And every emotion has had a use in the past, Otherwise, it wouldn't have been that big, that intense. All intensive emotions are the result of repeating the pattern, belief, behavior, emotion, for a long, long time. Otherwise, it will never get strong to be something limiting or to be something that gets in the way. Sometimes the client, when they understand that the emotion they have, even though it's been negative, etc., has a meaning and a sense and an utility in the past, they get a level of awareness which is more useful to step on. Oh, now I see why I have had fear in the past, because it helped me to do this and it helped me to do so. Now I know why I took everything with such amount of effort, because it has made me grow more effective, more productive, more disciplined. The question now is, what is the use of this emotion from now on, given that you want this different thing? We as coaches, if we have this perspective of utility of the emotion, may help the client embed and treat the emotion as if it were something of themselves, instead of something I don't want to, I want to get rid of. And I think this is a very important step in changing behavior. The first element is, how is my client expressing emotions? We may find clients that they express just with body postures, but not with language. And clients that express it very precisely in linguistic terms. However, you don't see anything in terms of gestures or body postures. If we ask ourselves, how does my client express her emotions, we may be also helpful in, again, putting the mirror and playing the congruence principle. I am observing this. You are talking about this emotion this way, and this is what I see in your body, or this is what I see in... And one aspect that is always affected by emotions is rhythm. Rhythm. When emotions are intense, the rhythm changes. It's like a survival response of the brain. So rhythm, paying attention to rhythm, can also help. Understanding my client's way of expressing emotions. I have been talking so much that I want to stop here. I know that I mentioned the problem-solving process. However, I more than that, I would like to hear you and to take advantage of your presence with your comments and your questions, please.
Alfonso, this is Guillermo. I would love to ask you a question.
Hola, Guillermo.
Hola.
Un abrazo.
So at the beginning of your talk, you were talking about the three levels, right? Belief, emotion, and response. And you made a comment about, towards the end of that section, about maybe breaking the process with the weakest wire. And
yes.
I didn't quite understand what you meant, and I wonder if you might illustrate it with an example.
Sure. A client which has a given emotion that is impeding him to have a good communication in public, okay? And he says that before, the minutes before, or when they told him by telephone, you've got to give a presentation to these people that this day, that place, etc. He gets anxious and starts sweating a lot. Okay? This is the emotional. This client is telling you what is the emotion. Okay? Now, this is only one part of it. I, as coach, I am curious, what is the belief system, the system of beliefs associated with that emotion, okay? And also, at the same time, I want to know what are the response patterns associated to anxiety, to what he is calling anxiety, okay? So I make questions in the three levels in every direction.
Right.
So that the client becomes aware that it's not just taking off the anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a system
right.
that has wires among the three elements, emotion, beliefs, and responses. In any case, there will be some connections, belief, emotion, or emotion behavior, which are stronger than others. So I will try to figure out with him the strength of those connections. If I'm successful, he will gain awareness that are wires or connections which are weaker or not so strong than others. And he may choose to go that way instead of going in the unilateral perspective. Okay? Is that enough?
That is enough for me. Thank you so much, Alfonso.
Thank you.
Alfonso, thank you. I'd like to build on what Guillermo started. Would you say that it is weaker because there has not been attention put on it? If I look at the next thing that you said.
What I'm meaning is that the client knows intuitively that some connections are stronger than others. For instance, when I'm anxious, then I start moving from one place to the other, non-stopping all the time. Or when I'm anxious, I believe or start thinking that the audience is going to put me in trouble with their questions, okay? The only way that the client's way of telling you is also telling what is the most important connection. You can see in her body, you can see it in her voice, you can see it everywhere. What is the strongest connection?
Okay, that clarifies it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Alfonso?
Yes.
Well, thank you. It's fascinating. Just building on what Guillermo and Terry just said. So you're working with the clients and he's gaining awareness about the strengths of the wire. And then he's choosing the weakest place to start something new because it would be the easiest place for him.
If we are lucky, yes. Of course, I do not induce my client to break any kind of wire. The only thing is that even though my client is talking about an emotion, I always ask around about the beliefs and the actions that are for him connected to that emotion.
And then you ask him, talking about your emotion, belief and actions, what would be the best place?
What do you want to do with this?
Okay. First, yeah.
Or what would be a best? Sometimes they even talk about feeling is a vicious circle. Is something very automatic, etc. So I typically figure out the question according to her language.
Okay.
But putting once the client is aware that it's not only an emotional question, it's not only a beliefs question, it's a whole system question, they start seeing different things and new ways of coping with that. New ways of stepping ahead.
Okay.
Only by making questions that open the perspective for the client.
Okay. If I'm thinking about it, sorry. Please do.
Can I ask you something, Alfonso? You mentioned that sometimes you get as a response from the client that it's a habit, it's vicious. Mm. And what do you exactly ask in these situations?
When they say it's a habit.
Yeah, I can give you an example. Mm-hmm. One of my clients.
Mm-hmm.
She always laughs when she gets embarrassed or mm-hmm. she laughs and she, even in serious situations she's always going like this
mm-hmm.
And this is a pattern and mm-hmm. this is an emotion, right? But I don't know what to do.
What is the belief connecting that laughing with whatever she feels in these difficult situations?
Yeah,
what is the thinking pattern? Okay. And then when she says the thinking pattern, you ask, what is the relationship between that thinking pattern and laughing and that thinking pattern and whatever is her emotion? Okay? Because in this case, laughing is the response. It's not the expression of the critical emotion, as I understand.
No, it's the response.
Okay. So once she gets awareness of all directions, she may look at things in a different way.
Okay, thank you.
I would like to say that it all goes together. It's once the client understands more her pattern, including the three elements, it's easier for the client to accept the emotion instead of holding the perspective of fighting against this emotion that I don't understand or that I don't want for myself. And for me, this is the critical step. Assume that the emotion is in a system, in a pattern of behavior, and that it's been useful in the past. And that I know now some wires that could be broken instead of fighting against the emotion.
Because, Alfonso, thank you. First of all, it was really, you know, enlightening. And I believe this. The reason is because the clients believe, or people believe, that emotions come to us and they control us. And once you made the connection, the wire between the belief and the patterns behavior, they understand that, yes, I have control because I can maybe change my beliefs or maybe change my behavior.
And this will be easier for me than fighting against my emotion. Right. But it also works in the beliefs direction. You may have a belief which is very solid, okay? And this is more, so to speak, more standard way of doing coaching. You have a belief, you ask for the emotion, and the client becomes aware that there is an emotion which is not useful and maybe incoherent for whatever she wants to get. So I think it works in every way you can figure out.
Triangle.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Alfonso, for sharing your wisdom with us. And I'm sure there are many unasked questions that will go with us to our trainers.
Yes.
Or our former trainers. And I thank you for that, because being an explorer is definitely what coaching is about. You're a master explorer.
Mm-hmm.
Next month, we will have Kathy Harmon on June 15th with the topic of agile team coaching. And I hope we get to see you all again. This will be on the website for you to be able to listen again. Thank you, everybody, for participating and being here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.